Once again, I get to tell the good people of the Motorsport 101 community to free my brother Lungard. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Free my brother Lungard. Welcome to episode 667 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. And in the second half of this doubleheader, we're going to be talking about IndyCar at Road America. Wow. One of my favorite rounds on the IndyCar calendar. Probably is my favorite round on the IndyCar calendar. Always produces great racing. And, well, it was less of the great and more of the chaotic kind, but I still can't deny it was a really entertaining race. We got drama, we got chaos, we got adrenaline pretty much all the way from start to finish on this one. And in the end, Christian Lundgaard gets his second win of the year, but it very nearly didn't work out that way multiple times over. We'll break all of that down in the next 45 minutes or so with my co-host, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello again, mate.
No, you can't win them all. You can't win them all.
Yeah, it turns out your man's made a bit of a boo-boo.
Yes, I said last time out that we used the CGR strategic dumbassery mulligan, and then this was the one time a year that Alex Palou does something really stupid mulligan. But it didn't really punish him at all because, well, genuine acts of God can swing both ways in IndyCar.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the reasoning behind that very shortly, because this was a messy race. The caution rules come into play again. The penalty box in the end of the box score on the IndyCar website was two pages long. You don't get that very often. We had, I'd say at one point, maybe four or five different dudes who could have won this race. Alex Palou being one of them. Marcus Armstrong being one of them as well. We'll talk about him a little bit as well. Who had a heartbreaking way to not get his first win in the series, and a whole lot more, including Joseph Newgarden, Graham Rahal's silly behavior, a big silly season move that's all that we actually got breaking news about only a few hours before recording. We got lucky on the timing on this one this time around, as big news. Felix Rosenqvist is leaving MSR at the end of the season. That's already been confirmed. We'll talk to you a little bit more about that later on. But in the meantime, here's the places you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you have to follow our personal handles, you can do that at dreharrison.bluesky.social. cbuckley917, the same address. Same on Twitter, dreharrison101 on there. The podcast itself is at motorsport_101. You can follow us on Instagram and motorsport101pod. You can follow us on TikTok, M101_podcast. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. And you can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to the episodes live as they're being recorded, which Jason, Kira, and Max are doing. So hope you guys enjoy the show. Right, without further ado, let's get into the madness that was IndyCar at Road America. Alex Palou has now been on pole for 6 straight weeks. I think it's 42 consecutive days at time of recording. The last time anyone in a North American open wheel series had 5 consecutive pole positions, it was another Alex Zanardi. Back in kart from 1996 through to the first 2 rounds of 1997. We miss you, brother. In the race itself, Christian Lundgaard immediately lost his front wing after misjudging and hitting the back of Scott Dixon's car. There is no good reason why I'm telling you this right here and now. Palou held an early 4-second lead through the first stint. It was a classic Alex Palou, string the field out on better tire management and new strat. We were in the middle of the first round of green flag pit stops until we get a first caution. This is for Romain Grosjean's tire coming off at the bottom of the main straight at the end of his first scheduled stop. This was actually bad news for a lot of people, because just as the lead group were all had just done their stops, the lead group were coming up to the start finish line, and a lot of cars, as a result, had to take emergency service because the pit lane closes in IndyCar the moment a full course yellow comes out. So I believe it was 7 cars that had to be sent to the back of the field because they were on fumes and had to take emergency service in a closed pit, including
unless you are actively getting service in the pit box, you then have to pass through the pit lane and take the penalty on the time you're lost going down at the limited speed.
Yeah, and for those who hadn't come into the pits yet, they were out of fuel, so they had to come into a closed pit. And if you do that in IndyCar, you're sent to the back of the grid, basically, on that restart. And because of the timing of it all, Felix Rosenqvist, who was already in his pit box when the caution was thrown, came out marginally ahead of Alex Palou, so he inherited the race lead. We go to the second stint. This time, the 10 crew goes for the undercut strategy. But Palou gets caught speeding at the end of pit lane. He's given a drive-through penalty as a result of the speeding. So he has to pass through the pits again. It drops him to 22nd place. But his blushes are immediately spared because 2 laps later, Christian Rasmussen has a hybrid failure and his car dies on the start-finish straight. So let me get this straight. This is the second time this season an ECR car has died on the front stretch of an IndyCar track this season.
Well, you know, Dre, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course and Road America are basically the same track. No, wait, they're not. What are the odds?
Yeah, and in the words of Doofenshmirtz Evil Incorporated, it's not a lot, but it's weird that it's happened twice. Rasmussen's car dies. Caution comes out again. This is right in the middle of the second pit stop window because the caution stretched it out a couple of laps longer. So again, we have to get a bunch of stops under green. But because Palou has already done his second stop, it actually bumps him back up to 9th on the road because of the majority of the field having to come in. So we're going to take their stops imminently anyway. So after all of that, Marcus Armstrong now picks up the race lead again, and he leads for the majority of the back half of the race. But because Christian Lundgaard has taken both his stops under yellow, he's now back in play because of the having to save time by not having to go through the pit lane and pit under green. So he's now in 8th or 9th place at the time. So he's able to run more aggressively as well because he saved a set of sticker reds for the final stint of the race, and he can pit later than everybody else can as well. He runs the overcut, comes in with 10 laps to go, and he leapfrogs about 5 cars. He's now 2nd ahead of David Malukas on the road and about 4 seconds behind Armstrong, and he's now chasing down Armstrong for what now is the race win, effectively. Lundgaard is closing in, but we're thinking Armstrong's probably got enough in hand to hold out until, with 4 laps to go, his engine starts coughing. Lundgaard comes through to take the race lead, and then a lap later we see that Armstrong's engine straight up explodes. It's an old-school F1 V10-esque style blowout.
V6 was running on about 3 of those cylinders by the end of that.
Yeah. He's done. Heartbreak for Marcus Armstrong, who was this close to his first IndyCar Series win. He's out. Caution comes out. We were able to get Armstrong's car off the road quickly to the point where it's a 1-lap green flag shootout for the win, an IndyCar favorite staple around here. And Lundgaard's able to hold on against David Malukas to take his first IndyCar win, but chaos happens behind him because Will Power and Graham Rahal are fighting for the final spot on the podium. Graham Rahal, for lack of a better phrase, turns across Will Power in the braking zone on the back straight towards, there's 4 corners left on the track. It's the back straight. Rahal turns across the braking zone, hits Will Power's car, spins off into the outside wall of the gravel trap at the end of the straight. Race is suspended due to caution. IndyCar actually scores the race at time of caution rather than the start-finish line. So that means Will Power actually gets 3rd place and not the 3rd man over the line, which was actually Kiffin Simpson. He would have had his 2nd IndyCar podium, But because IndyCar took the result from the time of caution thrown, Lugard wins, Maluka second, Will Power third, Kiffin Simpson fourth, and Alex Palou somehow, after all of that nonsense, finishes P5 and extends his championship lead to 60 points over Kyle Kirkwood, who was 11th on the day, and Malukas is now 61 points back. Christian Lingard is now minus 77. So he's back in the title picture. You could maybe make it a long shot argument for right now. But Cam, what a manic race that was.
I'm going to move this up to the top of the list. Graham Rahal is getting a beehive. Send this man a beehive. Make the bees extra angry. Bro. Fuck yeah, I was blocking. Well, the neat part is, blocking is illegal in IndyCar, and it was penalized this race. Louis Foster did it.
Yep.
You know, the corner that Will was trying to go around the outside, famous for outside overtaking. Oh, wait, no. You open the steering and run them out wide and then keep your position.
It's exactly what Will Power and Kyle Kirkwood did to each other famously in this race last year.
Why did you block? Why did you weave that hard in the braking zone, you doofus?
Desperation. I think he just assumed that Power was going to back out of it, and he didn't, because he couldn't, because he was in. He was already in the braking zone.
Already at the threshold of braking. Like that, you can't back out of a move when your car is there, when you're already on the brakes. Like, you have to. You've given him the line going into the turn. You've given him a car's width. You need to keep that car's width there, or you're going to get spun off his front wing. That's exactly what Graham Rahal did.
It's doubly annoying because, one, Graham Rahal is a 20-year veteran of top-level American open-wheel racing. It's not like he's a rookie that doesn't know any better.
He knows better.
He is a 20-year veteran of this series.
I thought he knew better.
I thought he knew better than this. And the man, I mean, beloved Krista Hardy, who was meant to be on this show, but sadly, he's busy running a 5K right now. He's become runner man. What a guy. He actually got to interview Graham immediately after the race. Good job on him. And Graham doubles down. It was like, fuck yeah, I was breaking. You're allowed to do that. And I'm like, no, Graham. No, you're not allowed to do that.
Allowed to move in reaction to one of your competitors. It's one of the core tenets of IndyCar's racing etiquette. Now, in a series where that otherwise is shown to be meaningless, when you can run people all four off, track limits are a suggestion. That is the one that they are pretty clear on of, hey, you cannot do a weaving reactionary move to someone attacking you. You make the one move, you're allowed to go back to the racing line if you are clear. Graham Rahal was not clear. Will Power's front wing was very much, very much alongside his front tire, and you gave him racing room only to take it away mid-braking zone. That is a perfect recipe to get yourself crashed. And I'm glad race control is like, well, we didn't see Will doing very much wrong.
He didn't. He just applied the brakes like a normal human being, and then Rahal just drives into the side of his car. I mean, there's nothing more to it than that. It's pathetic from Graham, quite frankly. He knows better. I think he just thinks being wrong and strong makes him look cooler, because he's now become... I mean, I talked about this before when he got the podium at Barber earlier in the year, that seemingly the public favor, I think, has turned back in towards Graham's favor a little bit this season. Like, Will Buxton loves a Graham Rahal podium, and he's had three of them so far this season. It's a shame because he's genuinely driven really well this year for RLL. He's having
best that Rahal's looked in like 5 years as a driver.
For Graham, it's probably his best season in a decade. It's certainly trending that way. And yet now his season's going to be more well known for that bit of stupid driving from what at worst would have been fourth place. You know, it's just...
I don't even think it's at worst. If he just lets Will take that line, you defend like a skilled racing driver, a nearly 20-year veteran of the sport, you make him go the long way around a turn you can't really go the long way around and overtake someone, and you keep your podium.
Yeah, finishes 23rd in the end. Was very, I mean, I think Graham is very lucky to not be starting the next race at Mid-Ohio next week from the back of the grid, because that's what I think he should be doing. He was given no further action because he was investigated for blocking as a result of ends in them. But I think what's happened here is I think race control has done that thing where they judge based on the outcome, where it's like, oh, well, he didn't finish.
They judged it as self-policing, I think is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with that. I would have been fine either way. But ultimately, like, he threw away a podium from just really amateurish driving. And while I have my criticisms of Graham Rahal, the last thing I think of him as a driver is as an amateur.
No.
He looked like, and that is the kind of move I expect out of, like, a first-year Indy Next graduate who doesn't have a lot of time wheel-to-wheel. Not someone who's been at this for 20 fucking years.
I was going to say, like, in all fairness to Graham, he's not really known as a dirty driver. He's not had, like, an egregious reputation for just running dudes off or anything like that, which makes it all the more baffling that he's done something like that today. I suspect it was just desperation to try and hold on to that podium on the final lap of the race, which to a degree I get, but there's limits to this. You can't be that stupid and then also double down on said stupid. When the media comes calling and wants to ask, well, why did you turn into his braking zone? Which is the cardinal sin. It's
a valid question to ask, because it's what he did.
It's what he did. It's just a shame that that race was marred by that. I mean, let's talk about the winner, Christian Lundgaard. That was a remarkable four-stop comeback, given, as we mentioned, he drove into the back of Scott Dixon's car on the opening start of the race. Had to immediately come into the pits at the end of lap one for a new front wing change. But this is the nature of IndyCar, Cam, and the joys of having a closed pit lane when the caution comes out. Sometimes you get the rub of the green in your favor because Lundgaard was able to turn a four-stopper into a race win. What a guy.
Yeah, and he got the caution. The cautions fell exactly the right time of between in the pit cycle.
Yeah.
So for it to basically negate that, it happened twice. And that he just was electric in clean air. He was so, so fast. Absolutely smoked Pato O'Ward all weekend. I don't know what's going on with him. Worth pointing out as well, two McLarens were competitive this weekend. It was Lundgaard and Siegel, and Siegel has nothing to show for it as a result of Joseph Newgarden killing him. More on Joseph later.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Lundgaard just back half of that race was stupid fast in clean air, was able to overcut, and then he and Malukas fighting for second. Malukas with the accidental Golden Melon nominee. Half on the grass, and you did not intend to go for the move.
And he just ends up there anyway and makes it stick. It's worth pointing out as well, the fifth time in his IndyCar career, David Malukas has finished the race in second place and not won yet.
Yes, I like how on Instagram he then posted that when I'm in a finishing second competition and my opponent is David Malukas.
Quote, I'm P2 maxing.
What a guy. He's a dangerous levels of shit poster. But yeah, Lundgaard looked like he was probably going to come just short in a still brilliant recovery drive. I feel like we have to talk about the aggrieved party here for a minute. Marcus Armstrong got robbed by that engine failure. He was good all day, got up into second early on off the start, and then was just on track for a really good race pretty much all the way through. And it's good old-fashioned engine failure.
It's proven what I've said about Marcus Armstrong for a while. And I said at the start of the season in my preseason podcast here, I said that Marcus Armstrong would win a race this season. That was my bold prediction. This close. But
very close. Yeah, the whole left side of that, the left bank of that Honda could be charitably called full of holes.
Yeah, it's a real shame. Armstrong, that was the best he's looked in IndyCar since he got here. I think it was 4 years ago now with Chip Ganassi. And I know Chip likes him a lot, and for good reason. That was just a really, really good all-round performance. Good pace. Maybe not quite the best on the day. You know, there were circumstances where there was someone else, like Apollo early on, and then, you know, Lundgaard late on via circumstances was a little bit quicker than him. But Armstrong had pace that was good enough to win the race. And
not the only shank as well. He looked like he was going to be second best shank on the day. Rosenqvist got absolutely robbed by that Rasmussen caution because it fell at the exact wrong time for him. Because he looked to be odds on favorite to win after Pelot made the mistake in the pit lane.
Yeah, and he was coming into pit lane. And then the caution drops. He has to immediately cut the grass to get back onto the racetrack because the pit lane's there closed. Because if he doesn't stop, he's got to run through the pit lane and then take emergency service. So it kind of forced him to pit with everybody else on the cautions end of the back of the field. It was unfortunate in that sense because, again, Rosenqvist was really quick. I said to people on our Discord call when the race happens, don't count out Felix Rosenqvist. He's always quick around here. Yeah, he got his first win here with Chip Ganassi Racing a few years ago. He was second here last year to Pelot in what was a fuel save kind of finish at the end. But Rosenqvist is quick, and there's a reason why he's become the central figure in IndyCar silly season. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But just a really, really strong weekend for Mayer Shank Racing. Probably the best they've looked in IndyCar as a team. Pretty much,
I'm never getting that. They're only ever winning Indy 500s, which if you're only going to win one kind of race, that's the one to win. But it is wild that any brush with success they have outside the 500 is met with a soul crushing comeuppance every single time.
It's a good problem to have. Let's put it to you that way. It's a very, very good problem to have. A great weekend for them. Again, David Malukas, the first win is definitely coming. He's right there on the brink. And I'll say this much. The amount of reactions that man gets on social media, Malukas is going to be a star. I will tell you that right here and now. Malukas is the Gen Z superstar that IndyCar's always wanted. So I'm saying it right here and now. That man is going to be insanely good for the next few years. And right now, in my opinion, right now, he is Alex Palou's number one contender to the title.
Alex? Don't do that. This was the most nailed-on win of the year. Don't do that.
He was leading that race. He had a comfortable lead when he came out of the pit lane. And it looked like going by the radio, he forgot to... I think he just pressed his button early.
He just gunned it out of there. Actually, King, who was watching the race with us, called it out as it happened. He's like, was he fast leaving there? A second later,
called it.
Penalty for speeding.
I didn't spot that, in fairness. It was a great call.
King is now in a state of hyper-focus now that his Knicks have finally won a championship. he's gone through each level of Super Saiyan. He's basically Super Vegito now.
Yeah. Imagine if you just got sliced by a beam sword. Yeah, absolutely.
Getting beat up by a coffee jawbreaker.
I'm gonna defend your mans for a minute here, which, to be fair, Alex Palou doesn't need defending in any way, shape, or form, but I'm gonna do it anyway here. A drive-through penalty does not fit the crime. It just doesn't, in my opinion. Like,
I don't have a particular issue with it because that's pretty standard in U.S. motorsport of, hey, if you speed in the pit lane, drive-through penalty.
But the thing is, right, even with that in mind, and I know this is a classic North American motorsport, this is more of a cultural problem than a problem in a vacuum, if you get what I'm getting at here. There's no good reason why IndyCar can't bring in time penalties. If you can stop a race and declare a result based on a time of caution and call a result right there and then, you can have time penalties. Because they converted, because New Garden was taking out Nolan Siegel, right? We saw that at the end of the race, and he was given a converted drive-through penalty. IndyCar scored that as 30 seconds. So they added 30 seconds to Joseph Newgarden's race time. I'll be real with you. I don't think that fits the crime either. Like, okay, he needs something for taking Siegel out, but is that worthy of 30 seconds? I really don't think it is. Maybe I'm
given what happened,
but like,
given the end of the race and that, like, they took the timing from the end of the race because it finished under caution, but they took the order from the time of caution. A time penalty pretty much kills Newgarden's race either way.
Sure.
That's why I think they gave him the big one of the, hey, don't do this. Because that was, it was a terrible wipeout.
It's Felix Rosenquist.
That was a kill.
It's Felix Rosenquist to Arlington all over again when he caused that big wreck at the end of the race.
Yes.
And that was also a one-lap shootout. They had that to end the race basically immediately right there. And then,
Gave that to kind of as an example setter. I tend to agree that we should just be able to give out time penalties. I just think I'm generally desensitized to, oh, he's speeding in the pit lane. Oh, that's a drive through. That's really dumb. The good news is it did nothing in the championship because Kyle Kirkwood had an atrocious weekend and Malukas. It's like Malukas and Kirkwood are trading weekends where they're just kind of off the boil.
Yeah. Like Malukas was a little bit off it in Detroit, where, of course, Kirkwood is really, really strong. This was the other way around. Kirkwood, I think, was 11th over the line on this one. So, you know, not a terrible day, but just not a particularly, just anonymous across the weekend. I mean, Kirkwood having to start from P16, I think, pretty much killed him from day one because he didn't get out of round one in qualifying, while Pelot started on pole again. Malukas just had a really strong all-round weekend, was just really, really good in contention the whole way through and finished in second again. Yeah, like I said, Malukas, I think, is the number one threat for the championship right now because I've not seen evidence that Kirkwood can oval this year. So with that in mind, I think Malukas is going to be, if Pelot is going to have a threat to his championship, I think it's coming from Malukas right now.
Out of all of them, yeah, I'm not massively concerned when, like, Pelot is having to either get struck by acts of God or make really dumb errors to have any inroads into his title, his title lead. I would say if he just keeps getting poles, eventually things will turn out all right. And terrifyingly, that is the form book, as he will just get pole wherever we go.
Well, that's the thing about it. This is Pelot's best qualifying year he's ever had. I mean, okay, he had, I think it was 6 pole positions last year. He's had, I think, 5 this year already.
Yeah.
The way he's going, if he goes at this pace, I think a huge part of what makes Alex Pelot so good is that he's always in contention. And part of that is being in the front of the field, staying out of other people's mess, and being able to dictate the terms of engagement by leading so often. And this was no exception, where, again, if you keep leading early races, you're going to eventually get races where you're not going to get a caution. Because we had that in IndyCar last year. We went, what was it, 4 or 5 weekends in a row without a caution? And we just weren't getting yellows anymore. And then when that was happening, Pelot just kept winning. And I think that's what's going to keep happening to Alex Pelot, where not only that, he will also get the advantage of running last in any short oval qualifier because he's first in the championship right now, which means he gets to go last every single time he gets a short oval. And we've got plenty of them between now and the end of the season, like Nashville, which is in a couple of rounds' time, and Milwaukee, which is going to be a doubleheader again later on this year.
Well, it's not like he's good at Milwaukee. Oh yeah, I was there for that.
Yeah, right. Only an act of God stopped him from winning that one, too. And that was his most dominant round of the entire calendar. Yeah, like, Pelot will be fine. It
stopped him. He finished second. And in Nashville, even last year, like...
Ran second.
Ran second. Oh, no, he couldn't beat Joseph Newgarden at full power.
Yeah, the best oval racer in the world. So, you know, like, it's more than obvious at this point. I think Pelot was going to be absolutely fine. And again, I think a big part of that is that he is having otherworldly qualifying form this season. His qualifying has been the best I've ever seen anyone have in IndyCar. He's just so... I think he's made almost every Fast 6, if not has made every Fast 6 so far this season. He's just incredible.
No, I think his worst qualifying result of the year is still like front 2 or 3 rows.
Yeah.
We have not seen it in our lifetime. The last time someone went on a run like this in American Open wheel racing, I had not been born yet. I existed, but I had not been born yet.
Yeah. My man was in the womb, chilling, essentially. And just having a look at my spreadsheet here. Has it got the number up? Alex Palou's average qualifying start this season is 2.6.
I mean, it's good, but it's not his road and street course average this year, which is 2.29.
For perspective, there's only one other man who averages a top six start in IndyCar, and that's Pato O'Ward, who's at 5.9. I think he's actually dropped out of the top. I think he's actually dropped over six now because he didn't qualify particularly well at Road America. I think he got knocked out in round two.
But Pato, the last 2 months, has been all over the fucking place.
Weird run of form of Pato, where it's like there's the odd weekend where it'll just be as usual. Like, it's like, you know what it is? Pato has not looked like winning a Grand Prix this year.
Not even close. I said not even close.
He's had a boatload of top fives. But he's not looked like he can win a race so far this season. It's really weird.
Yeah, and it's like, even this weekend, like, McLaren were not really in the mix for a great result until things fell the way they did for Lundgaard. Mm-hmm. Because they all weekend were like, like 6th to 10th on pace.
Well, that's the weird thing.
The whole time.
That's the weird thing about it. Pato O'Ward does not have a podium finish this season.
No. He really looked like finishing on the podium this season either. He's just kind of like in a no man's land between our three protagonists at the front, really could argue for now with Lundgaard. And then there's Pato, and then there's like a gap to everyone else. He's always in that kind of no man's land right now.
Yeah, it's looking like he's the best of the rest right now. It's looking like a four-way title fight between Palou, Kirkwood, Malukas, and maybe Lundgaard. But Lundgaard needs better ovals or else he's not going to
win. Lundgaard can't oval. Like, if Kirkwood can't oval, Lundgaard really can't oval. Because Kirkwood was actually looking like he was going to have a solid day in Gateway, and then things didn't really fall his way.
Indeed. But yeah. Just a weird, weird run of form for Pato. It's not outright terrible. He's fifth in points right now. He's just there. He's 40 points behind Lingard there. Lingard's been the better McLaren so far this year. There's just no getting around it now. Which is odd, but here we are. Also worth pointing out as well, Cam, and you'll love this. Very quietly under the radar, they said that they were actually going to reduce hybrid deployments at this race by 25%.
Now, why is that, Dre?
Risk of reliability failures.
Oh, so they were reliable during the race, right?
Well, apart from Christian Rasmussen's hybrid unit dying in the middle of the race for the second time on an ECR this season, no.
This is what happens when you select the lowest bidder. It's so dumb. You had multiple hybrid systems on the table. You picked the one that didn't work. Your two engine manufacturers had to step in and help to try and fix it, and it hasn't really worked.
The hybrid, I've said it before, it's added nothing to IndyCar since they brought it in besides pain and frustration. It's going to be 2 years to the race next time out in mid-Ohio since we had hybrids in the sport, and they've added nothing of value to IndyCar racing at all. It's not made the 500 any more interesting. It's not made the average road and street course race more interesting. And the series knows that because it's had to try and bring in a bunch of other mandatory rules on things like tires and suppliers in order to keep people happy. For me, right now, it is a goddamn waste. And yeah, I don't know. It's like IndyCar was not ready for hybrids, and it looks like it still isn't ready for hybrid technology, because if they're telling people to scale back to what the hybrids were when they were first brought in 2 years ago, what was the point?
These aren't very powerful hybrids anyway. I mean, these are
the supercapacitors.
Well, a supercapacitor can be powerful. Toyota proved that 13 years ago. But it's a bandaged together system that is less powerful than the not very powerful spec systems that they run over in IMSA GTP in the LMDH regulations. Those were problematic in and of themselves when they first debuted, but Fair play to Bosch. And are they still Williams Advanced Engineering? Are they still called that? Because I know they're not part of Mother Williams at this point.
No, they've been sold off, but I think they kept the name.
Yeah, like they have done a good job in terms of mitigating the issues that those had, where pretty much from middle of 2024 on, we've never really heard of a problem with that spec hybrid system. You had effectively a similar system on the table and you went with this. It just
doesn't make any sense.
Well, because it's cheap. They went with the cheapest option. It didn't work. You then forced Honda and GM and Ilmor all together to help and try and fix it. And they've not really been successful. And at the end of the day, the cars aren't reliable. Your manufacturers still aren't particularly happy about it. Your teams really aren't happy about it. Trey, are we happy about it as fans?
No. So why are you here? You've done nothing to improve the spectacle, which is what we fans care about most. I've never watched a race in IndyCar in the last 2 years and said to myself, you know what, thank God we got the hybrid.
Because they went with a system that adds little to no horsepower to the cars, adds a bunch of weight to the cars, and is unreliable.
Like, I would much rather have the cars we had before hybrid, because adding 50, 60 horsepower for a very short period of time, I think is not worth the 45 kilos of extra weight it's added to the car in general. That is I think that makes the car worse. And we've already seen, as Alex Rossi's talked about in his podcast, about how it's made the cars harder to, like, it's made them worse on tires and not as fun to drive.
Yeah. If you're going to add a hybrid system to the sport, and it's a spec hybrid system, it has no other job other than make a good name for itself and be reliable. It has no other job. It has failed at both of these jobs.
Yeah, just a waste of time. The fact we're walking back advancements in said hybrid, just take it behind the barn and kill it already. There is nothing good is going to come of this system. Just have a more powerful engine.
We were going to get that.
Yeah, just add another 60 horsepower. The sport can handle it on ovals. It's fine.
I don't know if these engines can handle it at this point anymore, because a whole bunch of Chevy engines had to get changed and Armstrong's exploded from the lead. Like, we are at the end of this car. We are at the end of these engines. And did the hybrid era ever really begin?
It's been nothing but a bout of pain and frustration ever since. And we still have one more year of this car to go, hopefully, before we get a new one in 2028. We think.
That we still haven't seen yet.
No. Because they're still apparently trying to argue over how pretty it's supposed to look, subjectively.
Just make it look like a 1998 Reynard. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Just weird shit. Silly season. The main focus, again, like, a lot of people wait with tenterhooks as to what Marshall Pruitt has to say in IndyCar, because, well, you know, he's the gospel of silly season rumors of on the grid. And, you know, you read them and you get some interesting ones. And this was an interesting one, because front page of said article this time around was Felix Rosenqvist. And nothing, this is actually a genuine surprise. Felix Rosenqvist is leaving MSR at the end of the season. That was breaking news today, that he's gone at the end of the year, and even Shank admitted he was disappointed and it was unfortunate that he's going. What we now know is that it's a two-horse race to get his signature between Andretti, we presume for the 28 car, because Marcus Ericsson is a free agent at the end of the year. Kirkwood and Power are tied down for next year already.
Yep.
And McLaren, and probably the number 6 car, they're in their own difficult dilemma, as you may have heard on previous shows. Christian Lundgaard is a free agent at the end of the year, but McLaren does have a right to match any offer that Lundgaard gets this offseason. So,
and if I'm McLaren, you hang on to that, man.
Lundgaard's
your best driver right now.
Lundgaard's a monster. He's got oval shortcomings, but there's one man in IndyCar that's better on road and street tracks than him, and it's the man in the number 10. That's it. like on Rodent Street courses, it's Palau and then it's Lungod, and Lungod really isn't all that far behind on Rodent Street tracks. Lungod would have probably had 5 or 6 wins already in the series if it wasn't directly for Alex Palau. He's a beast on
what he does.
Tracks. He's been that since he was in F2. I fully agree. I think there's only one team who could even entertain that with Lungod that he would want to go to. But according to Pruitt, all of Team Penske is tied down for next year. So,
and I would maintain my position from last that, you know, injury aside, I don't think Joseph has done particularly much this year to lose his seat. I think he's been much better on road and street courses than last year. And while the crash at the 500 was very dumb/unfortunate, it's damaged the rest of his year via the foot injury. Just put Felipe Nasr in the car at this point. Joseph was molasses on Sunday, and we know that that's not a question of his talent behind the wheel right now.
Well, that's the thing about it. He secretly, allegedly, has had surgery on the foot in the week we were off. Before this race happened, they tried to keep it hush-hush, but people had worked out that he'd had surgery on the foot. And when they asked him about it, he said, "Who told you?" So it was pretty much an open secret he's had the foot operated on. So it was clearly bad enough where it required surgery to fix.
Yeah, because I'm sure after last weekend, I'm sure he's gone to a doctor and a doctor scanned it over and, "Why were you racing on this?"
He's still on crutches. Like a month later.
He cannot like break to his full potential on that foot right now.
Yeah, he's right foot braking. They've had to adapt his car so he can right foot brake right now. Which,
not ideal.
Not ideal. He was slow in race trim, like back of the field levels of slow. And at that point, I have to ask, you're not winning the 500. Newgarden is not likely winning the championship this year, barring a miracle. There's not enough ovals for him to make up the difference at this point. His road and street courses are better than last year, but not by a huge amount. You're not winning the Aster Cup this year. You're keeping Newgarden in the car for next year, according to the contracts you've got. So what's the point? Shut Newgarden down for the year and see what Felipe Nasr can do. Like, there's no positive gain to play to having Newgarden drive your car at this point.
I don't get it either.
It's bizarre. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think we're just wasting everybody's time at this point. Just, like, what? If you're, like, I get Felipe Nasr is very, very keen to have a go in an IndyCar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is fair enough. He's the best sports car driver in the world.
Best prototype driver on Earth right now.
Yeah, he's the best sports car driver in the world right now. And Nasr was a very solid F1 driver in his tenure over there. There's no IMSA clashes left between now and the end of the year. You might as well just run Nasr in the car for the rest of the year and see what he can do. No, might even get him a job somewhere. We'll be great for him.
Yeah. I'll take him from my Porsches. No, I like, leave Newgarden in the car for the ovals. Let Nasr do the road courses. Who says no?
Why not? Newgarden is the favorite on any short oval in IndyCar. You're not going to be using the brake very often there anyway. So, like, fuck it. Why not just put Nasr in for the road and street courses? Just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Back to the Felix scenario. It's either Andretti or McLaren, by the looks of it. Apparently it was a big money offer, multiple millions of bucks. Good for him, first and foremost, because that man deserves a check.
I miss you.
So, Zach Brown, you up?
you doing anything over the weekend? Good for Felix that he has teams chomping at the bit to re-sign him. An Indy 500 win does do that for you.
Mm.
But also, are you ready to get hurt again by Zach Brown's house of contracts?
Well, apparently this was a large 7-figure offer. I mean, look, if you're Felix, you're in a really great spot right now. You've just won the Indy 500 a month ago. You've just become a dad for the first time. You're 35. You're in your prime right now as an IndyCar driver. You're top 10 in points right now. As it stands, kind of sitting to second the table right now. He is currently, sixth in the championship right now. So he's having his best ever IndyCar season on the whole right now, if this were to hold up. Sell high. You're not going to get a better deal than what you're going to get right now. Andretti's a good all-round team. Carl Kirkwood is having a great season right now. That's proof that Andretti can challenge on all fronts again if you're good enough. And we all know that Kirkwood is a phenomenal driver. He's just getting better and better every year. Or you could be the floor guy at McLaren again, a setup you clearly liked. He's very close with Pato. Pato was the best man at his wedding. He's the godfather to his kid as well. Like, he clearly loved his time at McLaren with Pato, at least. And you can be the floor guy in a Pato Award, Christian Lundgaard, Felix Rosenquist front three. That's a hell of a team. That's the best team in IndyCar on paper.
Sure. But you're driving for McLaren. McLaren, who just cannot punch through that ceiling to the next level. They've been spinning their wheels as a team, it feels like, for 4 years now.
Yeah. It's an issue. And I get the risk, because last time he was there, he was a genuine midfielder. He was more like a 12th place sort of.
The last time he was there, they could not drop him out of that team fast enough. They had the lawyers burning the midnight oil trying to get him out of that team.
Trying to flip him to Formula E again. He was a very good Formula E driver as well, because, what was the main thing we were praising Felix for as a younger driver was his versatility. You could put him in anything and he was quick. And that was, it spoke more to McLaren's struggles as a team as opposed to Felix himself, that he was slower than his potential in IndyCar, because since then, he's gone to Meyer Shank, he's won an Indy 500, and he's one of the six or seven best drivers in IndyCar, period, since then. He's sitting in the championship right now. He's in the Marcus Ericsson spot that we used to praise him for when he was at Chip Ganassi Racing. That really solid king of the midfield, borderline elite level driver. And that's what Felix has been for the last 2 years now. Fast as hell. So sell high. It makes sense for McLaren to try and bring him back. I just wonder. I'm in two minds, because Lundgaard's been really good for the last 2 years at McLaren, which says to me they're already a little bit better than what they were. But there's now no excuses. You need to win something major in the, like, if you're bringing Felix in. That's to give you a third bullet in the round for the 500 or win an Aster Cup. I don't care which one, but you need one of those two, because you've come close enough too many times.
I'll tell you what, that opens up a very, very interesting car for the 500, because the last couple of years, that 60 car for Meyer Shank has been grease lightning.
Very
good engineering team on that car that knows how to get the most out of a car at a 500. Unless it's the last day of qualifying, when it's actually the pole shootout. Every other day, you're good.
Well, I was going to say, it's an interesting time for MSR in general, because Marcus Armstrong apparently is being eyed up by other multiple teams. McLaren's been keeping tabs on him. Apparently, he might be the successor to Scott Dixon in the number 9 whenever Scott chooses to hang it up. And Scott's 46 years of age. The end is coming. You'd feel, like, maybe not now, but certainly in the next year or two, you'd think better than average chance Dixon retires. And that would be an ideal guy to have in the number 9 to replace Dixon, if you ask me. Right. He's a driver with high clout right now. He's a top 10 driver in the series. Best guy in the field that's not won a race yet. Then you've got other dudes like Kakuota, apparently, is in the frame. For those who don't know, he's been kicking ass in Super Formula this year. You know, an absolutely elite Super Formula talent. He wants to go to IndyCar. And the only reason he couldn't last year was because MSR didn't have a vacancy.
They will have an extra car, mind you. Because they're going to have a vacancy, and they're going to have the HRC engineered car. that the factory chartered car. So we need to see what happens with that.
Las Vegas Bananas.
But what did someone say over the weekend? In another life, Joseph Newgarden is an absolutely elite Savannah banana.
Absolutely. That's a great post. But yeah, like, why not Kakuosa? Why not give him a go? The kid's fast as fuck.
I'm curious to see if the 60 then turns into the chartered car. I wouldn't think so. I think it would be an extra car because it's got to be separate. I would still bet Ota gets the HRC chartered car. I don't know who goes in the 60. Or do you give that engineering team to Elio Castroneves and have that be the last best shot at number five?
I mean, there's some good names out there. Why not Rinus VK? That could work.
Someone go, like, read through the phone book, you find Carlos Munoz, get him in that 60.
I'm just running through my head now. What would I think? If Marcus Ericsson hits the block, we know he's quick in a Ganassi-branded car. Why not go after Marcus Ericsson if he's available? Maybe Kyle Collette, who's on a 1+1 deal. He could be a free agent end of season. And Collette's been really quick on occasion in IndyCar so far. Certainly got potential, is what I would say. He's got speed, and that's half the battle in IndyCar. Or you take a punt on... There's a lot of really quick... We talked about before, there's a lot of really quick Indy Next talent this year. Timur Kakarczyk, Max Taylor, Nikita Johnson's only 18, but really quick. Alex DiTullio, who was going to win race two. Did you hear about this, Cam? Was going to win race two at Road America, did cross the line first, and then got disqualified in the aftermath because they put the wrong qualifying tires on his car. They got them mixed up, and both Foyts were disqualified. Dear God, AJ Foyt. Oh, dear.
That is a hell of a way to lose. And it's not even like they did it in the heat of the moment. That was just a genuine operational error before they went out for qualifying. Very dumb.
Yeah, if you want to take a punt on an Indy Next talent, this is the year to do it, because there's like five or six really quick dudes in Indy Next. It's the most loaded Indy Next rookie class I can remember. There's five or six guys, like Nikita Johnson, Max Taylor, Alex DiTullio, Timur Kakarczyk. They're all really, really quick. You could take any one of those dudes, and I think you'd be fine. And Dennis Hauger's available potentially as well. Dennis Hauger could be in the frame. He's quick.
What if Connor Daly in that 60 car next year?
If they're rolling on ovals, and Daly automatically gives you a 500 chance.
With that team, that could be an interesting combo.
Well, the thing is, there's also murmurs that he would be bringing a large chunk of funding. So what would be Junkos Hollinger? Because allegedly Brad Hollinger is thinking about divorcing from Ricardo Junkos.
Which is just, given everything that team has been through, that would be a wild final outcome.
That could be Dreyer and Reinebold, and rest in peace to Dennis Reinebold, who sadly passed away.
Passed away last week, dude. Legend. Legend in the Indianapolis area.
Yeah, an Indianapolis legend. A lot of love in the local racing scene from him. He was loved by all in the paddock. A fantastic front-running part-time 500 team. His last wish might be his team finally having a full-time presence on the IndyCar grid in combination with Brad Hollinger. With charters, potentially.
Yeah, because remember, they were one of the teams that was the victim of the Lotus situation, and they have not been full. They were full-time very long time ago. Breaking those contracts cost them a whole lot of money.
There's murmurs that Daly's money could be the bridge to get him back into the series and for a DRR Hollinger partnership. Apparently, Linus Lundqvist is also apparently in the frame for a potential seat. Someone give Linus a full-time seat. Like, he's IndyCar's Manuel Gonzalez. Get this guy a ride, please, for the love of God. Like, man's good, quite frankly, and it's a crying shame that he's not on the grid. But hey, he might be Honda. At least he's now got a full time job. He's now Honda simulator driver over there, so he's got he's got his foot in the door again. Tanner Wylott's still out there as well, by the way. We barely even mentioned
somewhere.
Him.
Yeah, Tanner Wylott.
Remember Prema? Does Prema Racing owe you money?
Okay, I was able to fill in the financial gaps via early Lauren Heinrich investment.
There's a lot going on there, but yeah. A couple of other little drips and drabs on Pruitt's column. You heard about Christian Rasmussen getting a multi-year deal a couple of weeks back. He needs to ask about where they're out of Alex Rossi. Future could be up in the air there. RLL, Graham Rahal and Louis Foster are already tied down for next year because Foster's was a multi-year extension. Does Mick Schumacher want to stay in the series? That's the only question mark. RNL are keen to keep him, but does Mick want to stay? That's the only question mark in there. Again, boatload of other dudes in play. We're talking Ericsson, Ilott, Lundqvist, Collette. Others would be on the table if Mick chooses not to return. Another name out there, Luke Browning, apparently is getting a lot of excitement. He's had a very, very solid time in Super Formula so far. A lot of people seemingly like the fact he can run long on tyres and potentially strategically benefit from that. Browning's impressing a lot of people over there, so Luke Browning could be in the frame. Paul Aaron's name I've heard murmured around, those who don't know, he's Audi's current reserve driver right now from his Sauber days. Was very, very quick in F2 a couple of years ago when Paul Aaron was over there. He's in the mix potentially as well for a potential seat. And of course, as mentioned, Kakuota would be a favorite if, you know, for the Honda expanded seat if that hits the table. So a lot of fun options out there. We'll keep you posted as the season rumbles on. IndyCar is back next weekend with Mid-Ohio. Dear Alex Palou, do not run wide and take your eye off the ball with three to go this time, please, and thank you.
We already used the mulligan. We used both mulligans. We're back on it. We better be.
Don't fuck this up. That's another very winnable Palou round right there, and then so we'll see how that goes. Our next episode will be Formula One's Austrian Grand Prix next week. One of my favorites. I do like the Austrian Grand Prix. We'll see all three of the big hitters bringing updates. So Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull bringing big upgrade packages to that Grand Prix as well. We've also got the MotoGP Assen TT as well. Good doubleheader to come back to next week. We'll be looking forward to that. So with that in mind, we'll see you guys next time out here on M101. I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cameron Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Oh, don't say no to Palou. Say yes to Palou.